This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Thursday, January 5th of 2023. For the first time in 2023, I'm your host, Jimmy Searfoss. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, water is on tap for the upcoming state legislative session. We'll hear from a Western Slope lawmaker. With the 10-year anniversary of legal recreational cannabis in Colorado behind us, the Cannabis Report looks into how much marijuana research is actually out there to this point. And John Lindorf will be live in the studio to serve up a warm platter of radio nibbles. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour, then it's Kitchen Table Talk, our monthly call-in show about all things food and agriculture. Then at 9:30, Dennis Ryder will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all ahead this morning, but first a look at headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
The National Western Stock Show will hold its kickoff parade today in downtown Denver starting at 12 noon. The parade starts at Union Station, 17th and Winecoop, with the parade ending at 17th and Glenarm. The parade will not only include marching bands and floats, but a Western flavor of cattle, horses, and tractors. Dr. Temple Grandin, academic and animal behaviorist, will be the parade's grand marshal. A grand jury has indicted Denver police officer Brandon Ramos on criminal charges related to a July incident in which police opened fire into a crowd as bars let out near the intersection of Larimer and 20th Streets. Ramos allegedly shot five bystanders while firing at a man police say was armed. Ramos faces 14 charges that include assault, reckless endangerment, and the prohibited use of a weapon. The grand jury indictment released Wednesday says Ramos' decision to open fire in the crowd's direction was reckless, unreasonable, and unnecessary. Denver District Attorney Beth McMahon has indicated the two other officers who opened fire will not face criminal charges because prosecutors and the grand jury found their actions to be legally justified. The shooting injured six bystanders, with five experiencing gunshot wounds, primarily to their limbs. With the demand for Colorado's COVID-19 drive-through testing sites dropping, the state has decided to close the sites. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
The state health department announced Wednesday it will shut down the remaining COVID-19 testing sites by January 15th. Colorado currently operates 20 sites, but ran 150 sites during the height of the pandemic. State health officials say the availability of more at-home tests has lessened the demand for community testing sites, and demand has also dropped consistently over the last several months, fluctuating between 3% and 6% of overall capacity. Testing will transition to traditional healthcare settings, with the state providing free at-home tests through 200 distribution points across Colorado. Coloradans can still order free tests through a federal program. Free testing at schools is expected to continue through the end of this school year, and long-term and residential care facilities will still receive rapid tests as needed. For KGNU, I'm Steve Miller.
Boulder announced on Wednesday the city has selected three finalists for the independent police monitor position left open by Joey Lapari, who resigned last September. The three finalists are Mac Muir, who recently served as the supervising investigator for the Civilian Complaint Review Board for the City of New York, Kathy Rodriguez, who is the Colorado Peace Officer Standards and Training Compliance Manager, and Gina Torres, who currently serves as a police monitor for the Albany Community Police Review Board. Boulder officials will host a virtual candidate forum for the public next Wednesday, January 11th, starting at 6 p.m., where a moderator will ask the candidates questions submitted by community members. The event will be live-streamed on YouTube and available on Zoom for those who sign up in advance. On December 27th, a private citizen shot and killed a mountain lion near Netherland. Was this the same lion responsible for killing 15 dogs in the Boulder foothills in recent months? KGNU's Philip Armour has more.
A little more than a week ago, 2 days after Christmas, a Gilpin County resident stared down a mountain lion. It was attacking their dog. The resident took aim with a firearm, shot, and killed it. State law prohibits the killing of mountain lions without a license, even if the lion is attacking and killing dogs. But Colorado Parks and Wildlife officials are not pressing charges due to the totality of circumstances. Mountain lions killed 15 dogs in 30 days in the Netherland area this fall, and the community remains on edge. This adult mountain lion had ear tags, which indicates it was the same animal that had been relocated from the CU campus in 2021. Eyewitnesses to several of the dog attacks this fall say the lion or lions did not have ear tags. It's estimated that approximately 4 lions live per 36 square miles in this area, stretching from the Continental Divide east to I-25. And while the state typically offers 2 licenses to hunt mountain lions a year in this region, no tags have been filled since 2005. That means no lions killed in or around Boulder in 18 years. Statewide, about 500 mountain lions are killed each year. For KGNU, I'm Philip Armour.
Emergency dispatch operators in the state's ski areas are fielding a record number of automatic crash detection calls from skiers who wear the Apple 14 iPhone or watches, as the devices automatically call 911 when detecting a sudden stop by the user. The technology is meant to serve users when they experience a car crash. According to the Colorado Sun, all of the automatic calls that came into the mountain area dispatch centers during December did not involve car crashes, but snowy tumbles and non-emergency situations on the ski slopes. If skiers do not return a call from a dispatcher, emergency service operators will contact ski patrollers to check on the skier by sharing the latitude and longitude coordinates from the automatic call. Emergency dispatchers say the technology and the high number of non-emergency situations could delay response to a 911 caller with a real emergency, as each 911 call is handled in the order it arrives. Dispatch supervisors say Apple is aware of skier tumbles causing inadvertent 911 calls by the technology, and the company has told them they are working on a fix. For today's weather, the National Weather Service says skies will be partly sunny with highs reaching near 40. Winds will be light and variable, ranging from 5 to 7 miles per hour. Tonight, skies will be partly cloudy with lows in the upper teens, low 20s, and winds continue to be light and variable. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Jimmy Searfoss. Water continues to be a key point for Western Slope lawmakers during their legislative session. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, KVNF's Lisa Young talked to a state representative, Matt Soper, a Republican from Delta County who represents House District 54. They'll be talking about the upcoming water battles facing Colorado state legislators in 2023.
No conversation with a Colorado state representative would be complete without talking about water. What issues do you see coming in the near future concerning Western Slope water, and how do you plan to fight for our area producers?
Yeah, water is going to be a big fight this year. There was a big meeting down in Las Vegas of the Colorado River Association. They're wanting to have a compensated plan again, where they can pay farmers and ranchers not to irrigate. The problem I have with this is it left no room for like the Colorado River District to be involved. And it just takes away that local control element, because you need to be able to look at it in totality. Otherwise, you're just paying someone not to irrigate, and that water just goes from one head gate to another head gate, and it doesn't actually put more water back into Lake Powell or Lake Mead. So I think we're going to be seeing at least 2 or 3 bills this session that are all going to be focused on how do we get more water down into Lake Powell or Lake Mead. For me, I want to see more accurate measurements. I mean, going back to my TMDL bill, I've suggested that we have a more aggressive approach to measuring how much water we're sending to the lower basin states by having monitoring stations right at the Colorado-Utah line. Let's see how much Colorado water is actually entering the reservoirs, because I believe we're losing a lot to evaporation and seepage throughout the state of Utah and the state of Nevada as well, and we're not getting credit for that. So it's important that we have fair measuring that gives us accurate credit. The other thing is with the TMDL bill, that's all about water. And there is kind of this feeling that being listed on the TMDL and forcing a conversation about we could have very expensive desalination plants in Mesa County, we could have very expensive water treatment plants, or the third option would be to pay farmers all around Grand Junction not to irrigate anymore. Well, if that happens, this is the last stop before the Utah border and going on down to the lower basin states. So we could actually see this as a mechanism to take more Western Colorado water and ship it downstream without the Front Range ever having to be part of the conversation. Because right now we have numerous tunnels that are taking water from the Western Slope to feed Denver and to feed the cities up and down the Front Range. And they need to be part of the conversation of how do we comply with the 1922 Combeck, but also how do we protect our farmers and ranchers here in Colorado. And that's something that I'm going to be leading the charge on, along with people like Representative Mark Catlin in nearby Montrose. We really can't lose on water.
For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Lisa Young.
And now it's time for the Cannabis Report here on KGNU Community Radio. I'm Hanalee Myers, and I'm joined by longtime cannabis correspondent Leland Rucker. Leland, Happy New Year. Thanks for being here.
Always good.
Okay, so we talk a lot about research here on the Cannabis Report, but I have a question about those questions. How many questions have been answered? We've been talking so much about wanting research, but I would like to know how much research have we had, and it seems like we might have an answer to that question.
You know, it's pretty interesting because how many times in the last 10 years here in Colorado have you heard somebody pro or anti-cannabis say, we need more research, we need more research? Usually it's anti-cannabis people saying that. But NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, did a little research and found, used the federal PubMed website and found that there were 4,300 papers on cannabis in 2022. Now, that's more than 2021, where there was 4,200. So it's not that there isn't research. There's lots of research going on. The question is what kind of research is going on? There's not a lot of, you know, people aren't going after the same things. You see a lot of reports, you know, cannabis does this or cannabis does that, and you're just not sure, you know, there's no coordination as far as all this research. But there's plenty of research. You know, President Joe Biden signed a bill that will streamline studies. That was just last month that he did that. It contains provisions aimed at allowing researchers to study the actual marijuana that consumers are purchasing instead of having to use government-grown cannabis. And this is a story that Colorado had a part in. The government-approved cannabis is all done down in Mississippi, down at the University of Mississippi. And it's not the same marijuana that people are getting in stores. If you go to a store, that's not the same that you're going to get if you get the marijuana from the University of Mississippi. It's interesting. The University of Colorado did a study. They got a hold of some of the marijuana from Mississippi, and then they used other cities and states that had legalized it and found that there was, you know, differences, definite differences. And Sue Sisley, who's a clinical assistant professor in Arizona, she's been after this for a long time, and she has shown, I saw a presentation that she gave, and they actually take the marijuana and the whole bush and they grind it up and then give you the ground up ends.
Stems, everything, huh?
Yeah, stems and seeds. I mean, I can remember when I was very young, probably 50 years ago, somebody doing that to their pot because they could sell it for more money. But it's just not something that you do anymore.
Well, what you saw in movies for a long time of government weed being in the bag that was like ground up like powder, but that was seen as the good cannabis that you could get. So clearly, University of Colorado is participating in turning at least that story on its head a bit.
Well, even Nora Volkov, who's the NIDA director, she said last year that scientists have been limited in the source of cannabis that they've been permitted to study because you had to get the government product. And, you know, We'll see. Fingers crossed on that. We'll see if that actually happens. Both the House and Senate have passed earlier versions of their separate but similar cannabis research bills in late 2020, but nothing ended up getting to the desk of then-President Donald Trump. And Senator Chuck Schumer has pledged to work on decriminalization. I say fingers crossed because he's been saying this for years. Senator John Hickenlooper recently sought an update on the status of a federal report into research barriers that are inhibiting the development of a standardized test for marijuana impairment on the roads. This is interesting. We've said before on the show, nobody has come up with a test that actually works. Now, that doesn't mean that there won't be one sooner or later, but there hasn't been yet. And lastly, I just wanted to mention that this case in Kansas, in Hayes, Kansas, and the news of the case went all over the country, and it sparked a public backlash. And so police in Kansas moved to rescind a drug possession ticket officers gave to a terminally ill patient in Hayes, Kansas. The man couldn't even get out of bed on his own. Greg Pretz is his name. And he's been using a vape pen as well as eating the THC paste on bread to cope with his symptoms since being hospitalized about 3 weeks ago. And earlier this month, officers from the Hayes Police Department went into Brett's room at a local hospital after a staff member saw him using THC products and called the police. And that's when they arrested him. Police department said that hospital staff were concerned the vaping device was a potential fire hazard, which I can understand. But the officers gave Bretz a citation charging him with drug possession. So I'm really glad that that got taken away, because no one should ever be put in prison for a plant that they put in their body.
And certainly the public seemed to agree that that was absolutely the case for someone suffering from cancer. We will continue to bring these conversations to you here on the Cannabis Report, the first and third Thursday of every month here on KGNU. And Leland, thank you again for bringing us some of those headlines and update on some of that research that we will continue to bring you here on the show as well.
We'll keep watching.
Thanks so much. And for KGNU, I'm Hanalei Myers.
You know that sound. That means John Lindorf is here back in the studio live for a fresh edition of Radio Nibbles. How you doing today, John?
I am just doing great, and it really is thrilling to be back in the studio for the first time since September.
All right.
Just nice to be upright and everything. So we're catching up with a bunch of local food news. One thing I'm excited about, a year ago, the fire swept through Louisville and Marshall. It was horrifying. And a number of businesses closed. Most of them reopened. And the one that I was most worried about, Wayne's Smoke Shack, probably one of the finer barbecue places in the state, has finally reopened in Superior. And that's a beautiful thing. I think it has very short hours right now. There's a new Italian restaurant that's opening in Boulder, because I guess we need more pasta. But it's opening January 13th. It's called Stella's Cucina, 1123 Walnut Street. I wanted to let you know that if you want to be a food vendor for the Boulder County Farmers Market at its various locations, you only have until January 22nd to apply. And if you ever wonder, you know, how they decide on who gets to sell at the farmers market, this is the time to find out. I also wanted to mention that Pizzeria Locale, which is down on Pearl Street, widely regarded as one of the better pizza places in town, is closed. But it's mainly to rebrand and rename itself as Pizzeria Alberico. And what that means, they had expanded. They had opened other Pizzeria Locales, which were different. They weren't like the one in Boulder. So they're changing the name and keeping it Italian. So we have plenty of Italian food. And down in Denver, I just didn't think I would see this, but there's a new restaurant that's about to open. It's called the Bitcoin Grill. And it is, when it opens, it will be the only really kosher dining place in the area. Actual restaurant that is, by the law, kosher, sort of kosher Israeli. In any case, that's the Bitcoin Grill. They may regret that name eventually. There are also a couple of restaurants that were supposed to open. One was called Avant Garden, which was supposed to be a high-end vegan restaurant on Walnut Street. And it just had never opened. Another place, Dickens Prime, also never opened. You know, just wondering what happened. But perhaps the most incredibly exciting news is that Casa Bonita is reopening in May. Did you ever get to Casa Bonita?
Yeah, no, it's been closed since I've been up here in Colorado. I've got two parents that grew up in Colorado, and I have heard about how great it was. And also, you know, it might be one of those things where you grow up and you're like, oh, well, maybe this isn't that great anymore, like Chuck E. Cheese.
It was kind of like that, entertainment. And the food was horrendous. I could tell you terrible stories about how it was. but it's becoming a new place. It has a new and wonderful chef from Denver that I know. And I think the food will be tolerable. And Bart's Cave and its cliff divers will be there also. Something to look forward to.
John, so this is the new year. It's the year of the Chinese, or the year of the rabbit. The Chinese New Year of the Rabbit.
Yep, January 22nd. So you can start making your reservations now.
So do you have any recommendations in particular for where you can catch a Lunar New Year celebration?
One of the best places, there's a few minor celebrations in Boulder and Boulder County, but the real stuff happens down on South Federal at Alameda and Federal. There's a whole bunch of Asian shopping centers and places, and that's the best place to actually find those celebrations.
So I saw this on the calendar, and I thought that John might be pretty excited for it, but January 23rd is National Pie Day.
yes, it is.
Will you be celebrating?
I will certainly be going out for pie. We could devote an hour to the long, strange tale of National Pie Day, the American Pie Council, and Piegate. which changed all of that. But let me say, it's the Pi Day. Forget about all the other Pi Days. And this one is thoroughly devoted to people who make pie at home, not buying pies. Hopefully we'll find that there are some celebrations by the time we get there. But mainly, make pie, eat pie, serve it to your friends.
All right, so we're wrapping up here. John, what is the best thing you've been eating lately?
Almost everything because I was out of commission for a couple of months, almost everything I go out and eat right now is like, wow, pizza. the coolest thing I found, there's a new, it's not really new, it's called the Longmont Bakery. It's on Hoover Street in Longmont. And it combines the Marketplace Bakery, which was a bread bakery, and La Mama May's, which was a cake bakery. And so it literally is the first full-service bakery in Longmont. There aren't very many of them. And had some wonderful rye bread. They have great meringues and cookies and things. So it's a wonderful local family-run business.
All right. And that's all we've got for Radio Nibbles. Thank you, John. It's been great having you back in the studio.
Thank you.
And that's all the time we have for you in today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Jimmy Searfoss. Special thanks to Alexis Kenyon, Stacey Johnson, Lisa Young, Hannah Leanne Myers, John Lindorf, Leland Rucker, and Shannon Young for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for Kitchen Table Talk. That's coming up after these news headlines from the BBC.